"Now who's lying?" he said. "You know your children don't have your strength. I'll get what I want from them, and their children will be as much mine as the people here." She said nothing. He was right, of course. Even her own strength was mere bravado, a facade covering utter terror. It was only her anger that kept her neck straight. And what good was anger or defiance? He would consume her very spirit. There would be no next life for her. Then he would use and pervert her children. She felt near to weeping. "You'll get over your anger," he said. "Life will be rich and good for you here. You'll be surprised to see how easily you blend with these people."
"I will not marry your son, Doro, no matter what threats you make, no matter what promises. I will not marry your son."
He sighed, tied his cloth around him, and started for the door. "Stay here," he told her. "Put something on and wait."
"For what?"
she demanded bitterly. "For Isaac," he answered. And when she turned to face him, mouth open to curse both him and his son, he stepped close to her and struck her across the face with all his strength. There was an instant before the blow landed, when she could have caught his arm and broken the bones within it like dry sticks. There was an instant before the blow landed, when she could have torn out his throat. But she absorbed the blow, moved with it, made no sound. It had been a long time since she had wanted so powerfully to kill a man. "I see you know how to be quiet," he said. "I see you're not as willing to die as you thought. Good. My son asked for a chance to talk to you if you refuse to obey. Wait here."
"What can he say to me that you have not said?"
she demanded harshly. Doro paused at the door to give her a look of contempt. His blow had had less power to hurt her than that look. When the door closed behind him, she went to the bed and sat down to stare, unseeing, into the fire. By the time Isaac knocked on the door, her face was wet with tears she did not remember shedding. She made him wait until she had wrapped a cloth around herself and dried her face. Then, with leaden, hopeless weariness, she opened the door and let the boy in. He looked as depleted as she felt. The yellow hair hung limp into his eyes, and the eyes themselves were red. His sun-browned skin looked as pale as Anyanwu had ever seen it. He seemed not only tired, but sick. He stood gazing at her, saying nothing, making her want to go to him as though to Okoye and try to give him comfort. Instead, she sat down in one of the room's chairs so that he could not sit close to her. Obligingly, he sat opposite her in the other chair. "Did he threaten you?" he asked softly.
"Of course. That is all he knows how to do."
"And promise you a good life if you obey?"
"Yes."
"He'll keep his word, you know, either way."
"I have seen how he keeps his word."
There was a long, uncomfortable silence. Finally, Isaac whispered,
"Don't make him do it, Anyanwu. Don't throw away your life."
"Do you think I want to die?"
she said.
"My life has been good. And very long. It could be even longer and better. The world is a much wider place than I thought. There is so much for me to see and know. But I will not be his dog. Let him commit his abominations with other people."
"With your children?
Do you threaten me too, Isaac?"
"No,"
he cried.
"You know better, Anyanwu."
She turned her face away from him. If only he would go away. She did not want to say things to hurt him. He spoke softly.
"When he told me I would marry you, I was surprised and a little afraid. You've been married many times, and I not even once. I know Okoye is your grandson, one of your younger grandsons, and he's at least my age. I didn't see how I could measure up against all your experience, but I wanted to try. You don't know how I wanted to try. Will you be bred, Isaac? Does it mean nothing to you? Don't you know I wanted you long before he decided we should marry?
I knew.
She glanced at him.
But wrong is wrong. It isn't wrong here.
He shrugged. People from outside always have trouble understanding us. Not very many things are forbidden here. Most of us don't believe in gods and spirits and devils who must be pleased or feared. We have Doro, and he's enough. He tells us what to do, and if it isn't what other people do, it doesn't matter, because we won't last long if we don't do it, no matter what outsiders think of us. He got up, went to stand beside the fireplace. The low flame seemed to comfort him, too.
Doro's ways aren't strange to me, he said. I've lived with him all my life. I've shared women with him. My first woman...
He hesitated, glanced at her as though to see how she was receiving such talk, whether she was offended. She was almost indifferent. She had made up her mind. Nothing the boy said would change it.
My first woman, he continued, was one he sent to me. The women here are glad to go to him. They didn't mind coming to me either when they saw how he favored me.
Go to them, then, Anyanwu said quietly.
I would, he said, matching her tone. But I don't want to. I'd rather stay with you. For the rest of my life.
She wanted to run out of the room.
Leave me alone, Isaac.
He shook his head slowly. If I leave this room tonight, you'll die tonight. Don't ask me to hurry your death. She said nothing. Besides, I want you to have the night to think.
He frowned at her.
How can you sacrifice your children?
Which children, Isaac? The ones I have had, or the ones he will make me have with you and with him?
He blinked.
Oh.
I cannot kill him, or even understand what there is to kill. I have beaten him when he was in another body, and he seemed no more than flesh, no more than a man.
You never touched him, Isaac said.
Lael did once. He reached out in that way of his to change Doro's thoughts. He almost died. I think he would have died if Doro hadn't struggled hard not to kill him. Doro wears flesh, but he isn't flesh himself, nor spirit, he says.
I cannot understand that, she said.
But it does not matter. I cannot save my children from him. I cannot save myself, but... I will not give him more people to defile.
He turned from the fire, went back to his chair, and pulled it close to her.
You could save generations unborn if you wished, Anyanwu. You could have a good life for yourself, and you could stop him from killing so many others.
How can I stop him? She said in disgust.
Can one stop a leopard from doing what it was born to do?
He's not a leopard. He's not any sort of mindless animal.
She could not help hearing the anger in his voice. She sighed.
He is your father.
Oh, God, muttered Isaac.
How can I make you see? I wasn't resenting an insult to my father, Anyanwu. I was saying that in his own way, he can be a reasonable being. You're right about his killing. He can't help doing it. When he needs a new body... He takes one whether he wants to or not, but most of the time he transfers because he wants to, not because he has to. And there are a few people, 4 or 5, who can influence him enough sometimes to stop him from killing, save a few of his victims. I'm one of them. You could be another.
You do not mean stop him, she said wearily.
You mean...
She hunted through her memory for the right word...
You mean delay him.
I mean what I said. There are people he listens to, people he values beyond their worth as breeders or servants, people who can give him
just a little of the companionship he needs. They're among the few people in the world that he can still love, or at least care for. Although, compared to what the rest of us feel when we love or hate or envy or whatever, I don't think he feels very much. I don't think he can. I'm afraid the time will come when he won't feel anything. If it does, there's no end to the harm he could do. I'm glad I won't have to live to see it. You, though, you could live to see it, or live to prevent it. You could stay with him, keep him at least as human as he is now. I'll grow old. I'll die like all the others. But you won't, or you needn't. You are treasure to him. I don't think he's really understood that yet. He knows. He knows, of course, but he doesn't feel it yet. It's not yet real to him, don't you see? He's lived for more than 3,700 years. When Christ, the Son of God of most white people in these colonies, was born, Doro was already impossibly old. Everyone has always been temporary for him. Wives, children, friends, even tribes and nations, gods and devils. Everything dies but him. And maybe you, son woman, and maybe you. Make him know you're not like everyone else. Make him feel it. Prove it to him, even if for a while you have to do some things you don't like. Reach out to him. Keep reaching. Make him know he's not alone anymore. There was a long period of silence. Only the log in the fireplace slipped, then spat and crackled as new wood began to burn. Anyanwu covered her face, shook her head slowly.
"I wish I knew you to be a liar," she whispered. "I am afraid and angry and desperate, yet you heap burdens on me."
He said nothing.
"What is forbidden here, Isaac? What is so evil that a man could be taken out and killed?"
"Murder," Isaac said. "Theft sometimes, some other things, and of course defying Doro."
"If a man killed someone and Doro said he must not be punished, what would happen?"
Isaac frowned. "If the man had to be kept alive, maybe for breeding, Doro would probably take him. Or if it was too soon, if he was being saved for a girl still too young, Doro would send him away from the colony. He wouldn't ask us to tolerate him here."
"And when the man was no longer needed, he would die?"
"Yes." Anyanwu took a deep breath.
"Perhaps you try to keep some decency then. Perhaps he has not made animals of you yet. Submit to him now, Anyanwu, and later you can keep him from ever making animals of us."
Submit to him. The words brought a vile taste to her mouth, but she looked at Isaac's haggard face, and his obvious misery and his fear for her calmed her somehow. She spoke softly.
"When I hear you speak of him, I think you love him more than he loves you."
"What does that matter?"
"It does not matter. You are a man to whom it need not matter."
"I thought he could be a good husband.
On the ship, I worried that I could not be the wife he needed. I wanted to please him. Now I can only think that he will never let me go."
"Never?" Isaac repeated with gentle irony. "That's a long time, even for you and him." She turned away. Another time she might have been amused to hear Isaac counseling patience. He was not a patient young man, but now, for her sake, he was desperate.
"You'll get freedom, Anyanwu," he said. "But first you'll have to reach him. He's like a tortoise encased in a shell that gets thicker every year. It will take a long time for you to reach the man inside. But you have a long time, and there is a man inside who must be reached. He was born as we were. He's warped because he can't die, but he's still a man."
Isaac paused for breath.
"Take the time, Anyanwu. Break the shell. Go in.
He might turn out to be what you need, just as I think you're what he needs.
She shook her head. She knew now how the slaves had felt as they lay chained on the bench, the slaver's hot iron burning into their flesh. In her pride, she had denied that she was a slave. She could no longer deny it. Doro's mark had been on her from the day they met. She could break free of him only by dying and sacrificing her children and leaving him loose upon the world to become even more of an animal. So much of what Isaac said seemed to be right. Or was it her cowardice, her fear of Doro's terrible way of killing, that made his words seem so reasonable? How could she know? Whatever she did would result in evil. Isaac got up, came to her, took her hands, and drew her to her feet. "I don't know what kind of husband I could be to someone like you," he said. "But if wanting to please you counts for anything..." Wearily, hopelessly, she allowed him to draw her closer. Had she been an ordinary woman, he could have crushed the breath from her. After a moment, she said, "If Doro had done this differently, Isaac, if he had told me when we met that he wanted a wife for his son and not for himself, I would not have shamed you by refusing you." "I'm not ashamed," he whispered. "Just as long as you're not going to make him kill you." "If I had the courage of your mother, I would kill myself." He stared at her in alarm. "No, I will leave," she said reassuringly. "I have not the courage to die. I had never thought before that I was a coward, but I am." "Living has become too precious a habit. You're no more a coward than the rest of us," he said. "The rest of you, at least, are not doing evil in your own eyes." "Anyanwu, no." She rested her head against him. "I have decided. I will not tell any more brave lies, even to myself." She looked up at his young face, his boy face.
"We will marry. You are a good man, Isaac. I am the wrong wife for you, but perhaps, somehow, in this place, among these people, it will not matter."
He lifted her with the strength of his arms alone, and carried her to the great, soft bed. There, to make the children who would prolong her slavery. Book 2. Lot's Children, 1741. Chapter 7. Doro had come to Wheatley to see to the welfare of one of his daughters. He had a feeling something was wrong with her, and as usual, he allowed such feelings to guide him. As he rode into town from the landing, he could hear a loud dispute in progress, something about one man's cow ruining another's garden. Doro approached the disputants slowly, watching them. They stood before Isaac, who sat on a bench in front of the house he and Anyanwu had built over 50 years before. Isaac, slender and youthful-looking, in spite of his age and his thick gray hair, had no official authority to settle disputes. He had been a farmer, then a merchant, never a magistrate. But even when he was younger, people brought their disagreements to him. He was one of Doro's favorite sons. That made him powerful and influential. Also, he was known for his honesty and fairness. People liked him, as they could not quite like Doro. They could worship Doro as a god. They could give him their love, their fear, their respect. But most found him too intimidating to like. One of the reasons Doro came back to a son like Isaac, old and past most of his usefulness, was that Isaac was a friend as well as a son. Isaac was one of the few people who could enjoy Doro's company without fear or falseness. And Isaac was an old man, soon to die. They all died so quickly.
Doro reached the house and sat slouched for a moment on his black mare, a handsome animal who had come with his latest less-than-handsome body. The two men arguing over the cow had calmed down by now. Isaac had a way of calming unreasonable people. Another man could say and do exactly what Isaac said and did, and be knocked down for his trouble. But people listened to Isaac.
"Pelham?"
Isaac was saying to the older of the two men, a gaunt, large-boned farmer whom Doro remembered as poor breeding stock.
"Pelham, if you need help repairing that fence, I'll send one of my sons over."
"My boy can handle it,"
Pelham answered.
"Anything to do with wood, he can handle."
Pelham's son, Doro recalled, had just about enough sense not to wet himself. He was a huge, powerful man with the mind of a child, a timid, gentle child, fortunately. Doro was glad to hear that he could handle something. Isaac looked up, noticed for the first time the small, sharp-featured stranger Doro was just then, and did what he had always done. With none of the talents of his brother Lael to warn him, Isaac inevitably recognized Doro.
"Well," he said, "it's about time you got back to us."
Then he turned toward the house and called,
"Peter, come out here."
He stood up spryly and took the reins of Doro's horse, handing them to his son Peter as the boy came out of the house.
"Someday, I'm going to get you to tell me how you always know me," Doro said. "It can't be anything you see."
Isaac laughed.
"I'd tell you if I understood it myself. You're you, that's all."
Now that Doro had spoken, Pelham and the other man recognized him and spoke together in a confused babble of welcome. Doro held up his hand.
"I'm here to see my children," he said.
The welcomes subsided. The two men shook his hand, wished him a good evening, and hurried off to spread the news of his return. In his few words, he had told them that his visit was unofficial. He had not come to take a new body, and thus would not hold court to settle serious grievances or offer needed financial or other aid in the way that had become customary in Wheatley and some of his other settlements. This visit, he was only a man come to see his children, of whom there were 42 here, ranging from infants to Isaac. It was rare for him to come to town for no other purpose than to see them, but when he did, other people left him alone. If anyone was in desperate need, they approached one of his children.
"Come on in," Isaac said. "Have some beer, some food."
He did not have an old man's voice, high and cracking. His voice had become deeper and fuller. It contributed to his authority. But all Doro could hear in it now was honest pleasure.
"No food yet," Doro said. "Where's Anyanwu?" "Help him with the Sloan baby. Mrs. Sloan let it get sick and almost die before she asked for help. Anyanwu says it has pneumonia."
Isaac poured two tankards of beer.
"Is it going to be all right?" "Anyanwu says so. Although she was ready to strangle the Sloanes, even they've been here long enough to know better than to let a child suffer that way with her only a few doors away."
Isaac paused.
"They're afraid of her blackness and her power. They think she's a witch. And the mold medicine she made into some poison."
Doro frowned, took a swallow of beer. The Sloanes were his newest wild seed, a couple who had found each other before Doro found them. They were dangerous, unstable, painfully sensitive people who heard the thoughts of others in intermittent bursts. When one received a burst of pain, anger, fear, any intense emotion, it was immediately transmitted to the other, and both suffered. None of this was deliberate or controlled. It simply happened. Helplessly, the Sloanes did a great deal of fighting and drinking and crying and praying for it to stop happening, but it would not. Not ever. That was why Doro had brought them to Wheatley. They were amazingly good breeding stock to be wild seed. He suspected that in one way or another, they were each descended from his people. Certainly, they were enough like his people to make excellent prey, and as soon as they had produced a few more children, Doro intended to take them both. It would be almost a kindness. But for now, they would go on being abysmal parents, neglecting and abusing their children not out of cruelty, but because they hurt too badly themselves to notice their children's pain. In fact, they were likely to notice that pain only as an addition to their own. Thus, sometimes their kind murdered children. Doro had not believed the Sloanes were dangerous in that way. Now, he was less certain.
Isaac?
Isaac looked at him, understood the unspoken question.
I assume you mean to keep the parents alive for a while.
Yes.
Then you'd better find another home for the child, and for every other child they have. Anyanwu says they should never have had any.
Which means, of course, that they should have as many as possible.
From your point of view, yes. Good, useful people. I've already begun talking to them about giving up the child.
Good. And?
They're worried about what people might think. I got the impression they'd be glad to get rid of the child, if not for that. And one other thing.
What?
Isaac looked away.
They're worried about who'll care for them when they're old. I told them you'd talk to them about that.
Doro smiled thinly. Isaac refused to lie to the people he thought Doro had selected as prey. Most often, he refused to tell them anything at all. Sometimes such people guessed what was being kept from them, and they ran. Doro took pleasure in hunting them down. Land Sloan, Doro thought, would be especially good game. The man had a kind of animal awareness about him.
Anyanwu would say you have on your leopard face now,
Isaac commented. Doro shrugged. He knew what Anyanwu would say, and that she meant it when she compared him to one kind of an animal or another. Once, she had said such things out of fear or anger. Now, she said them out of grim hatred. She had made herself the nearest thing he had to an enemy. She obeyed, she was civil, but she could hold a grudge as no one Doro had ever known. She was alive because of Isaac. Doro had no doubt that if he had tried to give her to any of his other sons, she would have refused and died. He had asked her what Isaac said to change her mind, and when she refused to tell him, he had asked Isaac. To his surprise, Isaac refused to tell him too. His son refused him very little, angered him very rarely, but this time...
"You've given her to me,"
Isaac had said.
"Now she and I have to have things of our own."
His face and his voice told Doro he would not say any more. Doro had left Wheatley the next day, confident that Isaac would take care of the details, marry the woman, build himself a house, help her learn to live in the settlement, decide on work for himself, start the children coming. Even at 25, Isaac had been very capable, and Doro had not trusted himself to stay near either Isaac or Anyanwu. The depth of his own anger amazed him. Normally, people had only to annoy him to die for their error. He had to think to remember how long it had been since he had felt real anger and left those who caused it alive. But his son and this tiresome little forest peasant, who was, fortunately for her, the best wild seed he had ever found, had lived. There was no forgiveness in Anyanwu, though. If she had learned to love her husband, she had not learned to forgive her husband's father. Now and then, Doro tried to penetrate her polite, aloof hostility, tried to break her, bring her back to what she was when he took her from her people. He was not accustomed to people resisting him, not accustomed to their hating him. The woman was a puzzle he had not yet solved, which was why now, after she had given him 8 children, given Isaac 5 children, she was still alive. She would come to him again, without the coldness. She would make herself young without being told to do so, and she would come to him. Then, satisfied, he would kill her. He licked his lips thinking about it, and Isaac coughed. Doro looked at his son with the old fondness and amended his thought. Anyanwu would live until Isaac died. She was keeping Isaac healthy, perhaps keeping him alive. She was doing it for herself, of course. Isaac had captured her long ago, as he captured everyone, and she did not want to lose him any sooner than she had to. But her reasons did not matter. Inadvertently, she was doing Doro a service. He did not want to lose Isaac any sooner than he had to, either. He shook his head, spoke to divert himself from the thought of his son's dying.
"I was down in the city on business," he said. "Then about a week ago, when I was supposed to leave for England, I found myself thinking about Nweki."
This was Anyanwu's youngest daughter. Doro had claimed her as his daughter, too, though Anyanwu disputed this. Doro had worn the body that fathered the girl, but he had not worn it at the time of the fathering. He had taken it afterward.
"Nweki's all right," Isaac said. "As all right as she can be, I suppose. Her transition is coming soon, and she has her bad days, but Anyanwu seems to be able to comfort her." "You haven't noticed her having any special trouble in the past few days?"
Isaac thought for a moment.
"No, not that I recall. I haven't seen too much of her. She's been helping to sew for a friend who's getting married. The Van Ness girl, you know."
Doro nodded.
"And I've been helping with the Boyden house. I guess you could say I've been building the Boyden house. I have to use what I've got now and then, no matter how Anyanwu nags me to slow down. Otherwise, I find myself walking a foot or so off the ground or throwing things. The ability doesn't seem to weaken with age."
"So I've noticed. Do you still enjoy it?"
"You couldn't know how much,"
Isaac said, smiling. He looked away, remembered pleasure flickering across his face, causing him to look years younger than he was.
"Do you know we still fly sometimes, Anyanwu and I? You should see her as a bird of her own design, color you wouldn't believe."
"I'm afraid I'll see you as a corpse if you go on doing such things. Firearms are improving slowly. Flying is a stupid risk."
"It's what I do," Isaac said quietly. "You know better than to ask me to give it up entirely."
Doro sighed.
"I suppose I do.
Anyway, Anyanwu always goes along with me, and she always flies slightly lower."
Anyanwu the protector, Doro thought with bitterness that surprised him. Anyanwu the defender of anyone who needed her. Doro wondered what she would do if he told her he needed her. Laugh? Very likely. She would be right, of course. Over the years, it had become almost as difficult for him to get a lie past her as it was for her to lie successfully to him. The only reason she did not know of his colony of her African descendants in South Carolina was that he had never given her reason to ask. Even Isaac did not know.
"Does it bother you?" he asked Isaac. "Having her protecting you that way?"
"It did at first," Isaac said. "I would outdistance her. I'm faster than any bird if I want to be. I would leave her behind and ignore her, but she was always there, laboring to catch up, hampered by winds that didn't bother me at all. She never gave up. After a while, I began expecting her to be there. Now, I think I'd be more bothered if she didn't come along."
"Has she been shot?"
Isaac hesitated.
"That's what the bright colors are for, I guess," he said finally. "To distract attention from me.
Yes, she's been shot a couple of times. She falls a few yards, flops about to give me time to get away. Then she recovers and follows.
Doro looked up at the portrait of Anyanwu on the wall opposite the high, shallow fireplace. The style of the house was English here, Dutch there, Igbo somewhere else. Anyanwu had made earthen pots, variations of those she had once sold in the marketplaces of her homeland, and stout, handsome baskets. People bought them from her and placed them around their houses as she had. Her work was both decorative and utilitarian. And here in her house with its Dutch fireplace and kas, its English settle and throne-like wainscot chairs, it evoked memories of a land she would not see again. Anyanwu had never sanded the floor as Dutch women did. Dirt was for sweeping out, she said contemptuously, not for scattering on the floor. She was more house-proud than most English women Doro knew, but Dutch women shook their heads and gossiped about her slovenly housekeeping and pretended to pity Isaac. In fact, in the easy atmosphere of Wheatley, nearly every woman pitied Isaac so much that had he wished, he could have spread his valuable seed everywhere. Only Doro drew female attention more strongly, and only Doro took advantage of it. But then, Doro did not have to worry about outraged husbands or an outraged wife. The portrait of Anyanwu was extraordinary. Clearly, the Dutch artist had been captured by her beauty. He had draped her in a brilliant blue that set off her dark skin beautifully, as blue always had. Even her hair had been hidden in blue cloth. She was holding a child, her first son by Isaac. The child, too, only a few months old, was partly covered by the blue. He looked out of the painting, large-eyed and handsomer than any infant should have been. Did Anyanwu deliberately conceive only handsome children? Every one of them was beautiful, even though Doro had fathered some with hideous bodies. The portrait was a black Madonna and child right down to Anyanwu's too clear, innocent-seeming eyes. Strangers were moved to comment on the likeness. Some were appreciative, looking at the still handsome Anyanwu. She kept herself looking well for Isaac, even as she aged herself along with him. Others were deeply offended, believing that someone actually had tried to portray the virgin and child as black savages. Race prejudice was growing in the colonies, even in this formerly Dutch colony where things had once been so casual. Earlier in the year, there had been mass executions at New York City. Someone had been setting fires, and the whites decided it must be the blacks. On little or no evidence, 31 blacks were killed. 13 of them burned at the stake. Doro was beginning to worry about this upriver town. Of all his English colonial settlements, only in this one did his blacks not have the protection of powerful white owners. How soon before whites from elsewhere began to see them as fair game? Doro shook his head. The woman in the portrait seemed to look down at him as he looked up. He should have had too much on his mind to think about her or her daughter, Ruth, called Inweke. He should not have allowed himself to be drawn back to Wheatley. It was good to see Isaac, but that woman...
She was the right wife for me after all, Isaac was saying. I remember her telling me she wasn't once before we married, but that was one of the few times I've known her to be wrong.
I want to see her, Doro said abruptly. And I want to see Inweke. I think the girl's a lot closer to her change than you realize.
You think that's why you were pulled back here?
Doro did not like the word pulled, but he nodded without comment. Isaac stood up.
Weke first, while you're still in a fairly good mood.
He went out of the house without waiting for Doro to answer. He loved Doro, and he loved Anyanwu, and it bothered him that the two got along so badly together.
I don't see how you can be such a fool with her,
he told Doro once, to Doro's surprise.
The woman is not temporary. She can be everything you need if you let her,
mate, companion, business partner. Her abilities complement yours so well, yet all you do is humiliate her.
I've never hurt her, Doro had told him. Never hurt one of her children. You show me one other wild seed woman I've allowed to live as long as she has after childbearing.
He had not touched her children, because from the first she promised him that if any one of them was harmed, she would bear no more. No matter what he did to her, she would bear no more. Her sincerity was unmistakable. Thus, he refrained from preying on her least successful children, refrained from breeding her daughters to her sons, or bedding those daughters himself. She did not know what care he had taken to keep her content. She did not know, but Isaac should have.
You treat her a little better than the others because she's a little more useful, Isaac had said. But you still humiliate her.
If she chooses to be humiliated by what I have her do, she's creating her own problem.
Isaac had looked at him steadily, almost angrily, for several seconds.
I know about Nweke's father, he had said.
He had said it without fear. Over the years, he had come to learn that he was one of the few people who did not have to be afraid. Doro had gone away from him feeling ashamed. He had not thought it was still possible for him to feel shame, but Anyanwu's presence seemed to be slowly awakening several long-dormant emotions in him. How many women had he sent Isaac to without feeling a thing? Isaac had done as he was told and come home. Home from Pennsylvania, home from Maryland, home from Georgia, home from Spanish Florida. Isaac didn't mind either. He didn't like being away from Anyanwu and the children for long periods, but he didn't mind the women. And they certainly didn't mind him. He didn't mind that Doro had begotten 8 of Anyanwu's children, or 7. Only Anyanwu minded that. Only she felt humiliated. But Inweke's father was, perhaps, another matter. The girl, 18 years old, small and dark like her mother, came through the door, Isaac's arm around her shoulders. She was red-eyed, as though she had been crying or as though she hadn't been sleeping, probably both. This was a bad time for her.
"Is it you?"
she whispered, seeing the sharp-featured stranger.
"Of course," Doro said, smiling.
His voice, the knowledge that he was indeed Doro, triggered tears. She went to him, crying softly, looking for comfort in his arms. He held her and looked over her shoulder at Isaac.
"Whatever you've got to say to me, I deserve it," Isaac said. "I didn't notice, and I should have. After all these years, I surely should have."
Doro said nothing, motioned Isaac back out the door. Isaac obeyed silently, probably feeling more guilt than he should have. This was no ordinary girl. None of her brothers or sisters had reached Doro miles away with their desperation as their transitions neared. What had he felt about her? Anxiety? Worry? More? Some indefinable feeling not only that she was near transition, but that she was on the verge of becoming something he had not known before? Something new? It was as though from New York City he had sensed another Anyanwu. New, different, attracting him, pulling him. He had never followed a feeling more willingly. The girl moved in his arms, and he took her to the high-backed settle near the fireplace. The narrow bench was nearly as uncomfortable as the wainscot chairs. Not for the first time, Doro wondered why Isaac and Anyanwu did not buy or have made some comfortable modern furniture. Surely they could afford it.
"What am I going to do?"
the girl whispered. She had put her head against his shoulder, but even that close, Doro could hardly hear her.
"It hurts so much."
"Endure it," he said simply. "It will end."
"When?"
From a whisper to almost a scream,
then back to the whisper.
When?
Soon. He held her away from him a little, so that he could see the small face, swollen and weary. The girl's coloring was gray, rather than its usual rich, dark brown.
You haven't been sleeping.
A little. Sometimes. The nightmares. Only they aren't nightmares, are they?
You know what they are. She shrank against the back of the bench.
You know David Whitten? Two houses over?
Doro nodded. The Whitten boy was 20. Fairly good breeding stock. His family would be worth more in generations to come. They had a sensitivity that puzzled Doro. He did not know quite what they were becoming, but the feeling he got from them was good. They were a pleasant mystery that careful inbreeding would solve.
Almost every night,
Inweke said.
David, he goes to his sister's bed.
Startled, Doro laughed aloud.
Does he?
Just like married people. Why is that funny? They could get into trouble. Brother and sister, they could...
They'll be all right.
She looked at him closely.
Did you know about it?
No.
Doro was still smiling.
How old is the girl? Around 16?
17.
Nweke hesitated.
She likes it.
So do you,
Doro observed. Nweke twisted away, embarrassed. There was no coyness to her. Her embarrassment was real.
I didn't want to know about it. I didn't try to know.
Do you imagine I'm criticizing you for knowing? Me?
She blinked, licked her lips.
Not you, I guess. Were you going to put them together anyway?
Yes.
Here?
No. I was going to move them down to Pennsylvania. I see now that I'd better prepare a place for them quickly.
They were almost a relief,
Nweke said.
It was so easy to get caught up in what they were doing that sometimes I didn't have to feel other things. Last night there were some Indians. They caught a white man. He had done something, killed one of their women or something. I was in his thoughts, and they were all blurred at first. They tortured him. It took him so long to die.
Her hands were clenched tight around each other, her eyes wide with remembering.
They tore out his fingernails, then they cut him and burned him, and the women bit him, bit pieces away like wolves at their kill. Then...
She stopped, choked.
Oh, God.
You were with him the whole time?
Doro asked.
The whole time? Through everything?
She was crying silently, not sobbing, only staring straight ahead as tears ran down her face and her nails dug themselves into her palms.
I don't understand how I can be alive after all that,
she whispered.
None of it happened to you, Doro said.
All of it happened to me, every bit of it.
Doro took her hands and unclenched the long, slender fingers. There were bloody marks on her palms where the nails had punctured. Doro ran a finger across the hard, neatly cut nails.
All 10, he said. Right where they should be. None of it happened to you.
You don't understand.
I've been through transition, girl. In fact, I may have been the first person ever to go through it. Back more years than you can imagine. I understand, all right.
Then you've forgotten. Maybe what happens doesn't leave marks on your body, but it leaves marks. It's real. Oh, God, it's so real.
She began sobbing now.
If someone whips a slave or a criminal, I feel it, and it's as real to me as to the person under the lash.
But no matter how many times others die, Doro said, you won't die.
Why not? People die in transition. You died?
He grinned. Not entirely. Then he sobered. Listen, the one thing you don't have to worry about is becoming what I am. You're gonna be something special, all right, but nothing like me.
She looked at him timidly.
I would like to be like you.
Only the youngest of his children said such things. He pushed her head back to his shoulder.
No, he said. That wouldn't be safe. I know what you're supposed to be. It wouldn't be a good idea for you to surprise me.
She understood and said nothing. Like most of his people, she did not try to move away from him when he warned or threatened.
What will I be?
She asked.
I hope someone who will be able to do for others what your mother can do for herself. A healer. The next step in healers. But even if you inherit talent from only one of your parents, you'll be formidable. And nothing like me. Your father, before I took him, could not only read thoughts, but could see into closed places. Mentally see.
You're my father,
she said against him.
I don't want to hear about anyone else.
Hear it, he said harshly. When your transition is over, you'll see it in Isaac's mind and Anyanwu's. You should know from Annika that a mind reader can't delude herself for long.
Annika Stryker Kroon. She was the one who should have been having this talk with Nweke. She had been his best mind reader in a half dozen generations, beautifully controlled. Once her transition was ended, she never entered another person's mind unless she wanted to. Her only flaw was that she was barren. Anyanwu tried to help her. Doro brought her one male body after another, all in vain. Thus, finally, Annika had adopted Nweke. The young girl and the old woman had found a similarity in each other that pleased Doro. It was rare for someone with Annika's ability to take any pleasure at all in children. Doro saw the friendship as a good omen for Nweke's immature talents. But now, Annika was 3 years dead, and Nweke was alone. No doubt her next words came at least partially out of her loneliness.
Do you love us?
She asked.
All of you?
Doro asked, knowing very well that she did not mean everyone, all his people.
The ones of us who change,
she said, not looking at him.
The different ones.
You're all different. It's only a matter of degree.
She seemed to force herself to meet his eyes.
You're laughing at me. We endure so much pain because of you, and you're laughing.
Not at your pain, girl.
He took a deep breath and stilled his amusement.
Not at your pain.
You don't love us.
No.
He felt her start against him.
Not all of you.
Me?
She whispered timidly, finally.
Do you love me?
The favorite question of his daughters, only his daughters. His sons hoped he loved them, but they did not ask. Perhaps they did not dare to. Ah, but this girl. When she was healthy, her eyes were like her mother's, clear whites and browns, baby's eyes. She had finer bones than Anyanwu, slenderer wrists and ankles, more prominent cheekbones. She was the daughter of one of Isaac's older sons, a son he had had by a wild-seed Indian woman who read thoughts and saw into distant, closed places. The Indians were rich in untapped wild-seed that they tended to tolerate or even revere rather than destroy.
Eventually, they would learn to be civilized and to understand, as the whites understood, that the hearing of voices, the seeing of visions, the moving of inanimate objects when no hand touched them, all the strange feelings, sensitivities, and abilities were evil or dangerous, or at the very least, imaginary. Then they too would weed out or grind down their different ones, thus freezing themselves in time, depriving their kind of any senses but those already familiar, depriving their children and their children's children of any weapons with which to confront Doro's people. And surely, in some future time, the day of confrontation would come. This girl, as rare and valuable for her father's blood as for her mother's, might well live to see that day. If ever he was to breed a long-lived descendant from Anyanwu, it would be this girl. He felt utterly certain of her. Over the years, he had taught himself not to assume that any new breed would be successful until transition ended and he saw the success before him. But the feelings that came to him from this girl were too powerful to doubt. He had no more certain urge than the urge that directed him toward the very best prey. Now it spoke to him as it had never spoken before, even for Isaac or Anyanwu. The girl's talent teased and enticed him. He would not kill her, of course. He did not kill the best of his children. But he would have what he could of her now, and she would have what she wanted of him.
"I came back because of you," he said, smiling. "Not because of any of the others, but because I could feel how near you were to your change. I wanted to see for myself that you were all right."
That was apparently enough for her. She caught him in a joyful stranglehold and kissed him not at all as a daughter should kiss her father.
"I do like it,"
she said shyly.
"What David and Melanie do, sometimes I try to know when they're doing it. I try to share it, but I can't. It comes to me of itself or not at all."
And she echoed her stepfather, her grandfather.
"I have to have something of my own."
Her voice had taken on a fierceness, as though Doro owed her what she was demanding.
"Why tell me?" he said, playing with her. "I'm not even handsome right now. Why not choose one of the town boys?"
She clutched at his arms, her hard little nails now digging into his flesh.
"You're laughing again,"
she hissed.
"Am I so ridiculous? Please?"
To his own disgust, Doro found himself thinking about Anyanwu. He had always resisted the advances of her daughters before. It had become a habit. Nweke was the last child Doro had coerced Anyanwu into bearing, but Doro had gone on respecting Anyanwu's superstitions. Not that Anyanwu appreciated the kindness. Well, Anyanwu was about to lose her place with him to this young daughter. Whatever he had been reaching for, trying to bribe from the mother, the daughter would supply. The daughter was not wild seed with years of freedom to make her stubborn. The daughter had been his from the moment of her conception, his property as surely as though his brand were burned into her flesh. She even thought of herself as his property. His children, young and old, male and female, most often made the matter of ownership very simple for him. They accepted his authority and seemed to need his assurance that, strange as they were, they still belonged to someone.
"Doro,"
the girl said softly. She had a red kerchief tied over her hair. He pushed it back to reveal her thick, dark hair, straighter than her mother's, but not as straight as her father's. She had combed it back and pinned it in a large knot. Only a single heavy curl hung free to her smooth, brown shoulder. He resisted the impulse to remove the pins, let the other curls free. He and the girl would not have much time together.
He did not want her wasting what they had, pinning up her hair. Nor did he want her appearance to announce at once to Anyanwu what had happened. Anyanwu would find out, probably very quickly, but she would not find out through any apparent brazenness on the part of her daughter.